Okay, first comment. Who has the yellow dinner register? And I think it's on that side somewhere.
No, it's actually just halfway down this side. So.
Yellow dinner register, please. So, Martin, you've seen it there. When Alan comes in, if he hasn't marked it, please emphasize he needs to mark it and shoot it round here rapidly because we're running out of time for the caterers.
The TA's been asked to type up notes that he wants. Mm. Fiona's going to print out three copies, one for the chair, one for the TA, and one for you. Mm-hmm. And you should have those by about lunchtime so that if he wants to add any extra notes or agree any extra points, they can do that over lunch.
Okay. So that's the chair.
Alan, I'm going to pick on you. Sign the dinner register, please. Are you coming to dinner or not? And pass it on. Okay, people, please. There are people outside the door. Inside the door, please. Or shut the door on them.
Oh, they're not our people. Okay. Okay, yes.
Okay, first things first, yellow dinner register. As soon as it appears with you, and Stephen, I think you are the next to receive it, please mark it and pass it on. Thank you. I know it's hard for you males in the room to multitask, but I'm going to encourage you, I'm being really rude in saying that, to both tick and listen. Okay, that I think was a very good session. I heard some interesting comments as I went around the rooms, and I think I have to say that the best comment I heard was as I went upstairs to say, are we ready to go back? And Garth says, as the chair, we have found no threats to the profession, and Miranda adds only opportunities. Great. And hopefully we will find out a little bit more about that after lunch. So effectively the technical people are going to type up the notes and hopefully they will be ready as soon as we go into lunch. So the chairs, if you can, that I think the technical people will contact you, and if you can have a quick look at those, any comments that you want to make or your own notes on those, so that immediately after lunch you are ready to sit up there with me and really talk about what your groups talked about. So that will be useful. So we're dealing with it in a pretty rapid manner from now. However, I'd now like to move on. Having said that, and it definitely is moving on, but I thought that some of the comments that Anthony made around banking regulations fitted extremely well with our next topic. And you may well be saying, well, if the topic is from the Basel Committee, why isn't our member presenting that in terms of Bill? And Bill very kindly volunteered to do this session as a member of the Advisory Council, but showing his true delegation skills as the Secretary General, he is not able to be at this meeting and has asked Toshio Tsuki to be in his place and to present to us around the insights on interactions between accounting and the capital framework, as well as updates on post-crisis regulatory forms. So Toshio became the Deputy Secretary General of the Basel Committee in April this year. He's had a long career with the Bank of Japan, holding various positions, including Deputy Director General and Head of the International Division of the Financial System and Bank Examination Department, Private Secretary to the Deputy Governor, Head of Market Research Group, and Representative in Europe, located in London. Toshio, we thank you and welcome you to our meeting and look forward to your presentation and maybe even some insights in relation to Antony's comments about the future of regulations on the financial services industry, or not, as the case may be. But Toshio, the floor is yours. Welcome. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity today. Bill Cohen was really looking forward to attend today and make a presentation, but he had to sort of cancel his attendance at the last minute, so I'm stepping in, so I hope I can sort of provide some insights to this issue. So I'll talk about the interactions between the accounting and the capital framework and also provide some update on the Basel Committee's recent work. There's been some development, maybe less, I should say, provocative or less dynamic than the issue we've been discussing this morning, but there's been some development, so I would like to provide some update on the Basel Committee work. So first, some basic stuff on the Basel Committee's mandate and structure. Our mandate is to strengthen the regulation, supervision, and practices of banks worldwide with the purpose of enhancing financial stability. So the Basel Committee is currently chaired by Stefan Ingves. He's the governor of the central bank in Sweden, the Riksbank, and the secretariat is located in Basel, hosted by the BIS, Bank for International Settlements. That's why I'm based in Basel, Switzerland now. And the Basel Committee has five high-level dedicated working groups. And one of them is, we call it the AEG, the Accounting Experts Group. So the committee and the AEG have a very long-standing collaborative and constructive relationship with the ISB and the IFRS Foundation, which are we are really grateful for. So Bill Cohen is the member of this advisory council group, but we also are an observer on the monitoring board, currently represented by Fernando Vargas. He is a senior official at the Bank of Spain and chairs the AEG. And we also have an observer on the IFRS Interpretations Committee, I believe. So we have a very good dialogue, yes. And the AEG regularly meets with the IASB bilaterally and also through the three-way dialogues. So we have a lot of interactions which are really appreciated. So that's the structure. And so the next one is why accounting is important to the Basel Committee. This is pretty straightforward. So if you may recall, the G20 and its April 2009 summit, right after the financial crisis started, urged the supervisors and regulators to improve the standards on evaluation and provisioning and achieve a single set of high-quality global accounting standards. So this started off with this G20 statement, and both sides have been working together since 2009. The second bullet is about the audited financial statements. This is obviously generally the starting point for regulatory reporting, capital, and supervisory procedures. And high quality accounting standards strengthen the regulation, supervision, and practices of banks worldwide, thereby enhancing financial stability, which is ultimately the mandate of the Basel Committee. So usually the Basel Committee provides a lot of comment letters to the IASB proposals. And in that letter, we often state or start our response by saying that the committee has a strong interest in the quality of banks' financial reporting and therefore the accounting standards applicable to banks. And there are two reasons for this. The first is, as I said earlier, the accounting information. This provides the basis for the committee's prudential capital framework and a focus for the regulator's surveillance of banks. And the second point is that transparent financial reporting, this supports effective market discipline, which is basically, we call it the Pillar 3 disclosure. So this is one of the three important pillars of the Basel framework. I would like to touch upon the Memorandum of Understanding, the MOU. So this is an important milestone between the Basel Committee and the IFRS Foundation. So work has been ongoing since 2013, I believe. So it started 4 years ago, and quite recently, so it was September 2017, just a month ago, there was an agreement, it was published. So this is an important milestone. And the key provisions set out in this MOU, there are 3 points. First, it recognizes the nature of the cooperation between the committee and the foundation. The second point is it identifies areas of mutually supportive work while respecting the independence of each organization. And finally, it provides for continued cooperation. So this is not intended to change sort of the current very good relationship between the Basel Committee and the IFRS Foundation, but rather it communicates to the public at large the degree of collaboration that already exists. So we think that it doesn't really change, but it's sort of a statement that the two institutions have a very good relationship in terms of work. So obviously we have different mandates, and developing international standards, as you may know, is a very balancing act. So that being said, our bilateral discussions have allowed our members to candidly share perspectives from the position of supervisors that interact with banks on a daily basis. So here are some of the examples of areas of mutual interest. I've set out several issues from the IASB side and also from the Basel Committee side. But I would like to focus my comment on the first one, which is the ECL, which I'm sure many of you are interested in, and this will become a big topic for us for the Basel Committee going into the future. So on the ECL, first, we appreciate and support the move to the ECL accounting framework. We are very appreciative of that. So the accounting standard was finalized in 2014, so 3 years ago. And at that time, we turned our attention to how the standard interacts with practices of internationally active banks. So from this, we concluded that it was necessary to issue some guidance from the Basel Committee perspective to set out some supervisory expectations on a robust implementation of ECL. And that was the background for the Basel Committee to follow the IASB and publish its own guidance on credit risk and accounting for ECL in 2015, 2 years ago. So this guidance we view as sort of complementary to the accounting standards and presents the committee's view of the appropriate application of ECL accounting standards. But this does not set out the regulatory capital requirements on ECL under the Basel Capital Framework. So this is going to be dealt with from now on, and we have a dedicated task force which is working on this very difficult issue. So how does ECL interact between accounting and capital? So the Basel Committee published in March this year to retain for an interim period of maximum 5 years the current regulatory framework. So this is introducing as a transitional arrangement for 5 years, basically maintaining the current regulatory framework in terms of provisioning. And this was because of the limited time available until the effective date of IFRS 9, as well as to allow for us thorough consideration of the longer-term approach for the regulatory treatment of provisions in response to the movement to ECL models in many jurisdictions. So in terms of the next 5 years, we have this transitional arrangements that will take effect from January 1st, 2018, which is in line with the accounting movement, I believe. So the national supervisors will have the discretion to maintain the current regulatory framework, and the banks will have 5 years to sort of absorb the losses derived from the increase in provisioning. So this is for the next 5 years. And the Basel Committee doesn't think that the current sort of regulatory framework should sort of remain forever. We think this is a very big issue. We're very sensitive about this. So during this next 5 years, we plan to sort of develop our thinking on what should be the ultimate regulatory framework that will, in response to these changes in the ECL accounting framework. So the committee published a discussion paper on this longer term issue. I would highlight this is a discussion paper, not a consultative paper. So the committee currently doesn't have any consensus on what is the appropriate regulatory response. So there's no proposal. We floated some ideas, and through the feedback we received from the industry, we plan to think of what is the appropriate response. And I think it will be very important for us to actually collect the data from the banks in terms of the and sort of assess the actual impact of this change in ECO. And we will also see how the transitional period will go on in many jurisdictions and see the impact and then develop our final thinking. So this is still sort of the start of this huge project. So that's the accounting aspect. Next, I'll talk about Basel III, if I may, because this is currently we're devoting most of our resources on finalizing Basel III. So just some high-level aspects of what we are doing. So before the crisis, there was only one main regulatory metric. This was the risk-weighted ratio, the risk capital framework. So in response to the crisis, this was enhanced by sort of Basel III, the initial period, by enhancing the quality and quantity of capital and also expanding the risk capture, for example, in the trading book or the counterparty credit risk or securitization. So we enhanced the risk capture. And also, in addition to this risk-weighted ratio, we introduced several new metrics, which are highlighted here. We now have the leverage ratio, we have the large exposures regime, we have the liquidity coverage ratio, and the net stable funding ratio. So these are new liquidity regulations. And some jurisdictions have introduced stress testing. So, and also in the risk weighted ratio, we've introduced this macro prudential overlay. This is basically dealing with systemic risk and charging additional capital to global systemically important banks. So in our view, these additional measures aim to reduce the regulatory reliance on the risk-based capital ratio as the sole measure of bank financial health and provide sort of a broader perspective on achieving the bank safety and soundness. So we sort of call this the belts and suspenders approach. So we now have a more comprehensive regulatory framework. So on finalization of Basel III, so you may have heard through the press or a lot of industry reports on when Basel III will be finalized. The initial plan was to finalize the whole package by January of this year. We're not there yet, but I think we're getting very close. I'm very optimistic that we'll have a deal in the near future. So I'll just highlight, so what is currently undergoing on discussion, and what do we really want to finalize here? So there are several elements. The first one is the standardized approaches for credit risk and operational risk. These are very technical, so I think I won't go into the details here. And the second one is the treatment of the internal models. So through the crisis, it became clear that some of the large banks using internal models, they sort of measured the risks in different ways using internal models, because there's some flexibility here compared to the standardized approach, which is basically developed by the regular supervisors. So we thought that the RWA, the risk-weighted asset variability, was too much. So we thought we need to sort of restrict and reduce the variability in terms of the risk measurement. So that's why we propose some setting additional constraints on the use of internal models for large banks. And also, we propose to introduce a leverage ratio surcharge for the global systemically important banks, which is in line with what we did in the capital framework. And the final aspect is the output floor, which I will touch upon now. So this is basically the only outstanding issue in terms of finalizing Basel III. So the supervisors currently are not able to agree on what is the appropriate level of the output floor. So the output floor, if I may explain, so for banks using internal models, if we introduce this new floor based on the standardized approach, what it will effectively do is that this new floor will prevent their risk-weighted assets from falling below a certain percentage of what would have been required if the bank were to use the standardized approach. So a floor basically places a limit on the regulatory capital benefits that a bank using internal models can derive relative to the standardized approach. So as I said, one of the main policy objectives of the finalizing Basel III is to reduce variability in the measurement of risk-weighted assets using internal models. So by introducing this floor, we think this will meet the policy objective. So discussion is ongoing. There was a Basel committee meeting earlier this month. There was good progress. And also during last weekend in Washington, D.C., there was the IMF annual meeting, and there was also the G20 finance ministers, central bank governors meeting. It was discussed at those meetings, and there was good progress, but it hasn't been finalized yet. But the differences in views is getting smaller and smaller. So looking ahead for the Basel Committee, we have several priorities on our table. The first one is obviously finalizing Basel III, as I mentioned. So this is really the final touch of the whole regulatory reform we've been working on over the last 10 years now. It's a decade now. So a lot has been achieved, and we think that it's time to finish this regulatory reform. It's about 10 years, and I'm sure the industry had enough of it, but I think the regulators also sort of feel the same, that we need to finish this work. And by finishing it, I think we can sort of eliminate the regulatory uncertainty surrounding the industry or the financial markets. And once we finalize Basel III, the Basel Committee's strategic shift or focus will clearly move from standard development into more effective implementation of the standards, and also the evaluation of the standards. So before Basel III, the Basel Committee didn't have sort of a process to encourage the members' implementation of the internationally agreed standards, because as you may know, the Basel framework or the Basel agreement, the Basel Committee doesn't have any sort of enforcement power or anything for each jurisdictions to actually implement this internationally agreed standards. So we introduced in 2012 a new process called the, so it's the third bullet here, the Regulatory Consistency Assessment Program. We call it the RCAP. So what this is basically a peer review framework. And the Basel Committee sets up sort of an assessment team of like five or six people. And we go into each member jurisdiction and actually check sort of the compliance of the each jurisdiction's national implementation process and whether that sort of meets with the international agreed standard. And if there is a deviation, we would sort of point it out. We would publish it in a report so it's made public. So what we found over the last 4 or 5 years through this process is that this has been a very effective peer review process. So members feel that they don't want sort of a report to be published, which shows that they have a lot of deviations in their domestic rules. So there is always a very positive pressure for each member to actually rectify all the deviations. Not all, but most of the deviations. And if you look at the past 4 or 5 years, many countries have actually rectified their deviations and their enhanced their domestic rules to be more in line with the international standards. So I think this is a very effective tool working internationally, and we will continue to do this. And I think we will put more resource on this because, for example, currently the NSFR or the FRTB, the Fundamental Review of the Market Risk, this will be in the process of implementation in each jurisdiction. So after the countries actually implement this, the Basel Committee plans to go into each country and actually assess the implementation situation. So we will focus more on implementation. And also what is important is the evaluation of the actual standards we agreed on. So the FSB is also working on this. The Basel Committee will plan to work on this also, working together with the FSB, the Financial Stability Board. And one of the main objectives of actually evaluating the standards, this is really not to reopen any of the policy debate or reopen issues. I mean, it's more about whether the standards that are implemented, have they actually sort of meet the objectives of what was intended? Are there any unintended consequences? If so, we may need to fix it. But if we need to fix it, we need very strong, robust empirical evidence. So it has to be database basis. These are kind of the issues. Or are there any regulatory arbitrage associated with the new standards? I mean, this will be one of the topics we will sort of look into through the evaluation process. So these are the another sort of topic which the Basel Committee intend to devote a lot of resources. I have some others, but maybe I'll, in the interest of time, maybe I'll just skip. But maybe on the last part, the cyber risk, this is sort of related to what we've been discussing this morning. In terms of the Basel Committee's work on this aspect, we published sort of a paper on the fintech development end of August. It's out for comment by the end of this month. So if you haven't read it, I would recommend you to sort of read the paper. It's not a standard or anything. This is still evolving, a lot of innovation going on. So we don't want to kill the new developments in this world. So we are sort of, the paper is more, the nature of the paper is about sort of sound practices that we see in the fintech developments and some of the implications on the banking sector. So it's sort of a range of practice paper, but it's out for comment now. So if you're interested, please have a look at it. And also, on cyber risk, the Basel Committee hasn't done much on this very important topic, and that's because this is a very crowded place, and everyone is currently working on cyber risk. So we wanted to sort of avoid sort of overlap in terms of with other work. So we are currently sort of carefully looking at what each sort of other organizations have done on this issue. And but based on our assessment, we feel that there is room for us to contribute in terms of some providing guidance on the banking sector in this cyber risk area. So we just agreed to set up a new sort of working group on cyber risk. And this work hasn't started yet, but going forward, this will be another important topic for the Basel Committee. Yes, maybe I'll stop here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Toshio. As one of our members contributing around how the organization fits with the ISB and accounting and generally what we're doing. Very useful insights, particularly for those who are involved in the banking industry, but I think for all of us as to how a regulatory body can and should and does relate with the accounting. So yes, an opportunity for a few questions, and I knew that Goro would be itching to say something, so I might start with you, Goro.
Okay. Thank you, Joanna. I have a question on the ECL and the CECL of the US Gov. It is a kind of a disappointment and a concern that we had a different standard between the IFRS and the US Gov regarding the provisioning. And on page 6, you told that the committees considering for the longer term regulatory treatment of provisions. And do you have any plan or to require that the regulatory adjustment or reconciliation between ECL and CECL model?
So how we will absorb the differences in the two different standards or in the regulatory framework, or? Well, I mean, we already have a lot of sort of difficulty facing how to sort of reflect the ECL standards into our regime. I mean, this is basically not talking about the two different standards, but as a concept, the ECL concept. So. This is a very, very sensitive issue, and there's not much I can say at this stage, to be very frank. And one of the reasons is sort of, as you pointed out, the differences in between the your standard and the CECL standard, and also in terms of the timing. So I think banks. And also, like in Japan, there are some different issues. So if you look across jurisdictions, countries are in a very different situation, facing a bit different standards. So the Basel Committee as a whole has to sort of look into the differences. But we only have one standard. So how that would sort of feed into our sort of work is, that's why the work is very difficult, I have to say. So I may not be answering your question directly, but I mean, you've sort of highlighted the difficulties we face in terms of our work. So maybe that's all I can say at this stage.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. At least I could understand what the color or the atmosphere about this.
Yeah. So I mean, to be very, very frank, I mean, we're not sort of supposed to talk about any concrete policy options in the long term because there are so many differences in views and there's clearly no consensus at this stage. Yeah.
Thank you, Toshio, for that good response. Gavin.
Thank you very much. So I am here representing the Institute of International Finance. So we very much value our dialogue with the Basel Committee, Fernando and colleagues. Both bilaterally and indeed through the three-way dialogue with the ISB, as you've mentioned. So I just wanted to reflect that. If I may make a couple of comments focused around the ECL and indeed CECL issue. I think first of all, you mentioned the transition provisions. I think as an industry, we feel it unfortunate that actually, whilst the Basel Committee did provide some high-level guidance, it's been left up to each national jurisdiction to put in place whatever they feel appropriate. We probably feel that's unfortunate because clearly what it creates is quite a lot of potential for diversity between, certainly between banks in different jurisdictions, particularly the large banks. And I think the risk there is, from an investor perspective, they look straight through any transition requirements that national regulators put in place and basically go to an end point calculation straight away, which creates some other issues. So I just wanted to make sure that was reflected. I think the other comment, though, is the work that you've started looking at the interaction between the accounting ECL framework, whether it be IFRS 9 or CECL, and then the regulatory capital framework. I think we, have an as an industry, have urged and continue to urge the regulatory community to move that work forward at pace. I don't think we believe you have 5 years to basically do that. Why do I think it's so important? So the investor focus has moved more or less totally from asking the question about what's the impact of IFRS 9 or CECL on day one. That's actually not the question they're asking anymore. Very much to trying to understand what the impact of IFRS 9 or indeed CECL will be at a point of stress in the economic cycle. Because, of course, what the ECL models do is basically both amplify and indeed accelerate the impact of accounting impairment. That's what the accounting was designed to do, and that's exactly what they do. And I think we as an industry and indeed investors have some level of concern about the impact that that has through to regulatory capital. And why are we concerned about that? One, I guess as an industry, it may mean we end up carrying more regulatory capital, but that's life. But I think also importantly, actually, we're concerned that that may also have real world impacts on the provision of credit, especially at a time when the economy might need credit. And actually what that might do is reinforcing or accelerating a downturn that otherwise could have either been avoided or at least moderated. So I think there are some real-world consequences of the interaction of the accounting and regulatory capital framework, which is why we think it's really important for the Basel Committee to move that forward at pace. And I guess final observation from me is also if that work doesn't move forward, you know, you could see a scenario whereby actually the regulatory capital framework is called into question at a point of crisis, and indeed that undermines the credibility of the accounting framework. So in some ways, similar to some of the discussions that happened around fair value measurement back in the 2007-08 crisis, I think, you know, that obviously would be unfortunate. But I think from an accounting standard setter's viewpoint, that is a, you know, that's something to bear in mind. So I just really wanted to make those points, I think.
Thank you, Gavin. And Toshio, do you want to respond, or are you happy to just have a discussion offline, maybe?
Oh, okay. Well,
because there are a number of other questions here.
Sorry. No. I'll just say that we understand the sense of urgency. Maybe, I mean, the plan is not to use the 5 full years to work on a plan. So we already had an industry dialogue last week in Basel. So I think we understand that we need to come up with a solution in a fairly quick timeline. But again, as I mentioned in my introduction, I think we have to look into the data and the actual impact, because that would sort of guide us to whether a fundamental reform is necessary or not. So
just on that, I may just provide one comment. Clearly the impact we're concerned about is the impact impact at the point of stress. So collecting data is all well and good and clearly has some value, but actually the real concern is what happens at the point of stress. And I think clearly waiting until we experience a point of stress might turn out to be unfortunate if that's what we end up doing.
Okay, now we have a number of other questions, and while I respect Gavin asking those, making those comments and using this as an opportunity to, if you like, challenge or ask the question about what the Basel Committee is doing, I'm not sure that is necessarily what we should be doing now. So I do encourage you to ask perhaps more general questions rather than the
specific. So just to be clear, that's why I added the possible consequence from an accounting standard set as viewpoint at the end,
yes,
right?
I know why you added that at the end, but you got everything else in first. So if we can just be conscious of that, but obviously Toshio is here, so if you want to talk to him over lunch or over dinner, that's absolutely fine, and I'm sure he'll be fine with that. Having said that, Rudolf.
Yeah. Thank you for the introduction there. And you know, I just want to build a little bit on Gavin's point. My name is Rudy Bless. I represent a Financial Executives International, a U.S.-based preparer group. I happen to spend my days working inside one of the U.S. banks, so maybe you'll hear my thoughts come through here. You know, first I would say, you know, just as Gavin said, that overlap between accounting recognition and capital recognition, you know, is very relevant. I would say more capital is you know, one way you could phrase it, but, you know, holding double capital for particular risks is more how I would look at it. I would say it is indeed pressing from the U.S. perspective because, you know, you do have that stress testing period of time, which goes out just a number of years, and therefore it is really something that needs attention right now. So I would just say, I think the industry is very interested in engagement and would be interested to you to hear how is the Basel Committee going to be engaging with the industry, and maybe that's a lunchtime discussion. Okay, Joanna's saying yes. And then maybe the more pointed accounting question is, we do have the difference between IFRS 9 and CECL. How is the Basel Committee thinking about accounting equivalency? I'm happy about the MOU with the ISB. Is there, you know, how does that look vis-a-vis the U.S. standard setter?
Toshi, I'm going to suggest we actually hear the other questions and then perhaps you just make some closing remarks. Is that all right? So I had Alan next on. And is it Alan or Alain? Well, Alan.
I really don't mind. I've lived in so many different countries and had my name pronounced in so many different ways that I am immune to these considerations. Thank you very much for the presentation. From the European Commission side, we certainly welcome a very close cooperation between the Basel Committee and the ISB because, obviously, of the very close linkage between accounting requirements and the capital framework for banks. And if I can come back, I'm sorry, to the expected credit loss requirements, we certainly do think that early engagement between the Basel Committee and its members and the ISB is necessary because we are now facing a situation where work on the long-term regulatory treatment of provisions is lagging behind. And that is an unfortunate situation. And we certainly would want to have a level playing field notwithstanding the differences in accounting treatments in different jurisdictions, in particular between the EU and the US. There are other areas where we think such dialogue is important also. Changes can arise not only because of changes in accounting standards, but also because of changes in business models. And in the context of digital transformation and the increasing importance of fintech, we think also the regulatory treatment of software assets also is an area that requires attention, perhaps in particular from the Basel Committee, but it's another example of the close interaction between the accounting framework and the regulatory capital framework, where we think a level playing field is also urgently needed and needs to be developed quickly. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Hidetaki?
Thank you very much for your presentation, and I have one basic question in terms of accounting standards. Well, actually, you told us that your organization's purpose is, the biggest purpose is to enhance financial stability, and financial stability, of course, definitely it's very important. Well, actually, I experienced the last financial crisis in the steel market, and actually around 40% of steel demand in Japan disappeared in only three months. And then 6 months later, 80% of demand will recover. But anyhow, financial stability is very important. But on the other hand, accounting standard should be independent from governmental policy and macro financial policy. From that point of view, I'm very appreciated if you could tell me some point in terms of nature of accounting could be very important contribute to the financial stability, for example, prudence could be considered as important. But if you have any idea about that, could you tell me?
Okay, accumulating, and Jürgen, and then Hans wants to say a few words, and then I'm going to throw it back to you, Toshio. Is that all right?
Thank you. My name is Jürgen Kirchhoff. I represent the European Central Bank. Just to briefly come back to this discussion about the potential procyclical effects of IFRS 9, in particular the ECL model, you may be interested to know that the European Systemic Risk Board, they published a report in July 2017 as mandated by the European Parliament in 2016. The ESRB set up a dedicated task force to analyze financial stability implications of IFRS 9. And this report also contains a model which analyzes implications, in particular in stress periods. So there are concerns, this is true, but if I remember correctly, the conclusion also of the report was a bit more nuanced, basically saying the precise financial stability implications, the procyclical effects, largely depend on how the ECL model is implemented in practice, because it's principles-based. And in particular, the effects depend on the forecasting capacity of the models that are applied. So just for the sake of completeness.
Okay, Hans.
Just a few words on what Kevin said. I think in itself it's right that the whole purpose of the model is that it leads to an earlier crystallization of losses than was the case in the past, and that can have a sudden impact on a bank. But hopefully it will also have a preventative effect, that knowing that you could go through a phase like that, perhaps you're a bit more careful in the type of lending that you engage in. And I have said from the beginning, this can only work well if the banks are adequately capitalized. And you have to be able to take a hit. And if you are adequately capitalized and you take the hit quickly, then it will also lead to a much quicker resurgence of credit than currently is the case in some countries where the banks are still struggling with the legacy of the financial crisis. Finally, a word for the Basel Committee. I am delighted that you're trying to box in those internal risk weighting models as much as possible. It has always astounded me that central bankers who tend to be very worried about fair value accounting, how they could work with these internal models, which are more subjective than level 3 accounting and which are not even audited. So I really encourage you to go as far as you can.
Toshio, I'm going to leave it to you to respond as you see fit before lunch, and that can be as short or long as you would like, and you may want to have other conversations later.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for flexibility, I think. Yeah, maybe I'll just say, so some of the comments or ideas, well, thank you very much for all the comments, observations. These are very helpful in sort of developing our own thinking. Some of the ideas, like the double counting, double capital issue from the U.S. side, I think, or some of the software asset issue from the Commission, or the procyclicality issue from the ECB. The task force, which I just mentioned, this group has been discussing about all these issues. So I think it shows that we're not just sit in waiting, I think. As I said earlier, there was a meeting with the industry last week, and we are sort of working on the issue, and we're not, my presentation was a bit misleading. We're not just waiting for the data to arrive. I mean, we're doing what we can now, so the issues that were raised are not new for us, so I think that sort of highlights sort of the approach we are taking on this very important but very sensitive issue. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Toshio. I would really like to thank you for both being a stand-in for Bill and presenting to us today and hearing the comments that have been made, and your transparent as much as you can in terms of your response. And I think that we should all be very grateful and thank Toshio for his presentation today. I do encourage everybody from a member's perspective to think about them talking about their own organisation here and how we do interface with the ISB or the foundation, just as Toshio has done. So thank you, Toshio, and we'll now adjourn for lunch. However, as we adjourn for lunch, two things. First of all, the lunch adjourned for lunch for members and the official observers. And in terms of returning back and for the public observers, given that it is now 25 plus one and we were due to stop at 12:45, I think, and come back at 2, I'm going to suggest, April, that we come back at 2:15. So if we're back here at 2:15, and remember that the chairs of the groups, we are going to reconvene with the four of you and me sitting up on the stage to talk about the last session. So if we do that, and so lunch now and reconvene at 2:15, and the public observers, we will see you back at 2:15. Thank you.
Joanna is there. Originally, I suggested lunchtime today, but we thought that would just be too much with you just back. And Joanna actually thought that she needed some downtime to just catch up with things. So Thursday morning, just before you have your catch up with her.
Yeah.
I've done a little paper where I've put down some salient bits, and obviously there's probably too much detail, but I thought it'd be useful for us to have it in front of us when we think about it. I could do. I was going to work on it Thursday morning, but if you wanted it, just bear in mind that it's rubbish. And I looked at the 2011 one and the 2016 one, and the options I've suggested, and I mean we can rubbish them if we want, is that in 2016 we thought we'd try and make more SMEs, and we had an other category with two seats for SMEs, and they've never really been filled because we don't really engage with SMEs. So whether there's scope for saying that if we go for a mid to a firm under that,
that would help. She's concerned about too many accounts and auditors.
Okay, well that's fine.
We have that conversation.
The other options are, we could keep the representation as it is, based on six large firms. We could allocate the big four permanents, but alternate the other two seats.
That's, yeah.
Or we could keep the big four, but with the midterm forms appointed for a reduced period, so there's more rotation in the things.
Yeah.
And then make all, and then I've just put, we recommend either B or C. B, give some scope for representation. C, there's concerns about continuity.
I'd go for a rotation at C.
And I'm quite happy for you guys to.
And that's what we've done at IFRIC now.
That's what we've done, and I've put something in about IFRIC just to say that that's what we do at IFRIC.
Make sure they're different. And also, we might have something where we only do contributing firms, because a lot of them aren't yet.
I haven't touched on that subject at all. So I don't know if you want to have a look at that or not.
Hello. Hi.
Sorry?
Oh, we're in the breakout session.
Yeah.
Good. Good.